about 10:15, which I believe is the starting time. Is it? Do I have the go-ahead to go? System's clear. Guy in the back. Okay. I'm guessing no response is a good response. So, welcome to the Frameworks Conference, everybody. My name is Adam. I apologize for the lack of the template. I kind of didn't realize that I forgot to apply the Frameworks template to my PowerPoint until I sat in my first session, and as I started to go through these slides, it was becoming too much of a pain to get them all nice. So, anyways, it's in the nice Adobe corporate template because I actually work for Adobe as a ColdFusion specialist. So, again, you know about me. I work at Adobe as the only ColdFusion specialist, which means I'm part solutions engineer, part technical evangelist, and I'm also a member of the product team. I've been using ColdFusion for about 10-plus years, and before joining Adobe, I was at the U.S. Department of State, and prior to that, Johns Hopkins. All right, now I've got to go ahead and go. So, when I offered to talk at the Frameworks Conference, I pretty much was willing to talk about anything just because I'd like to come and talk about ColdFusion. But I'm a big fan of Fusebox. I've been using it for a number of years now. And so I wanted to do an introduction to Fusebox, but we do have a lot of kind of overlap with a lot of the topics of Fusebox, and then all of a sudden Sean shows up and brings all of his great Fusebox topics. So on the fly, I'm changing this more to a Fusebox in action. So I'm going to show like a live demo of a Fusebox app, and we're going to just look at code and see how everything fits together. And so you kind of get an introduction to Fusebox, but more or less we're going to be talking about just kind of how to build the app or how a real live app looks in Fusebox. And to do that, I'm going to be using an application that I developed called Lightpost, which is a really lightweight blogging application. Chris Scott from Cold Spring Frame, and Matt Woodwork, we all developed different versions of the same application in all the different frameworks. So the idea is that we'll have this blog application that people can use to compare and contrast frameworks, figure out how you did something in Fusebox and how that might relate to Model Glue, and vice versa. So I'm going to be using one of the Fusebox editions of Lightpost. Just background, what is a framework and what is a methodology and what the difference is here. All right, who's doing that? So a framework is pretty much a support structure to help you build software applications in a more standardized fashion. Most of the ones that we deal with in the ColdFusion world are coming with code libraries or core files, as we like to call them. And the idea is that, if we're all developing in the same type of manner, we can share stuff, we can move from job to job, we can train easier, and we can not have to keep, reinventing the wheel as we're solving problems. And the methodology part of this comes in as just like how we solve those problems and the philosophies we use to get, that go into building a framework. So, much of development is obviously pretty repetitive. Lots of CRUD apps going back and forth. And, every app you develop, the plumbing is usually going to be the same. You're usually doing the same sort of things where we're pulling data from a database, generating pages, and we need to deal with page requests and session scopes and stuff like that. So rather than having to, rebuild all this stuff over and over again, we go with the idea of using a framework. So, we can start right into the business logic. We can start right into making the application functional and work rather than, figuring out how to, manage the page flow. Homegrown or roll-your-own methodologies or worse, not having methodology at all makes it really difficult for your team to collaborate. If you hire new developers and you're working on some custom framework that you've ever done, well, they're going to have to get up to speed. And if you're a manager moving from projects to projects, if everybody's writing their own little way and their own little type of syntax, it makes it even harder for you to see how the progress of the projects are going, to check all that sort of stuff. So frameworks are a good thing, and I really love them. So, and then maintenance. That's actually, I think, one of the biggest benefits of just using any framework in general, whether it's Fusebox or not, is that once you get your app into production, changing these apps and expanding the functionality, adding new requirements, becomes a lot easier when you have a standard way of doing things. So, I think you guys probably all get the idea of the benefits of the framework. I probably wouldn't be at this conference if you didn't. So let me jump straight into the Fusebox. So where Fusebox is today, so Fusebox is ColdFusion's oldest and most popular framework, although the most popular part might be a little bit of a misnomer because there's a survey going on now that puts Cold Spring on top, but I think that's because everybody uses Cold Spring with everything else. But it was community developed by people who are, I think, in this room. or I saw walking around here today. Steve Nelson, Gabe Rothman. It's now maintained by Terratech. That's why I put the little red star there, because that's kind of brand new. So Hal Helms was managing the project before, and now he's given the honors to Terratech. It's actually being developed by an Adobe employee, Sean Corfield, as you probably know. And the idea is that it's encouraging best practices in, you know, web application design, such as like the model view controller, which is a really extremely popular pattern. Since version 4, it's been XML-based. So if you're coming from the Fusebox 3 side, where you're using these big CF case and switch statements, all that's gone, and now we're using XML to kind of configure the control of the applications. Another couple of the biggest benefits here is that it's really got a really, really long history of development, and a lot of people have had their eyes on it and, you know, contributed to it. And it's just really matured really well. And I think, you know, Fusebox 5 really shows a very mature, very, you know, forward-thinking framework. And that's why I like it. And the latest release came out in 5, or latest release, version 5, came out in June at the last CF United conference. And Sean is quickly working on 5.1 and, you know, 6.0, I think he's going for this year as well. And, of course, it's open source, so it's free. Again, some of the benefits, same type of benefits you'll find in a lot of the other frameworks. Modularity, the low coupling, so you can build modules that aren't relying on each other. The clarity that, you know, you can jump into an app and see where things are. You know where application variables are initiated. You know where the page flow is moving, just because it's a standard way of doing things. And then, you know, enforcing the model view control pattern. There's a lot of other things that kind of that are branches off of those core benefits, but that's kind of where they all start. And you get other things like code reuse and, you know, the simply or easier ways to maintain your applications. You know, with a large developer community, there's tons of plugins out there that are going to help you to solve problems that are already done. So now this slide's a little backwards because I always get the verbiage mixed up. So the way, you know, Fusebox, you know, philosophy works is that it's kind of like a physical fuse box. You have a giant circuit box, and then each one has fuse actions. And I get this backwards all the time just because fuse actions actually have fuses, not fuses have fuse actions. So I apologize for that, but I did this in Visio. When I went to click on it, it blew up when I tried to fix it, and so it wasn't going to help. But the idea is that you build your applications in a really modular fashion. We'll call that a circuit. So we could have a login circuit. And then that login circuit would have fuse actions, which are kind of like events. So maybe a login would have a fuse action of login. And then in that login function, we would call different fuses. And maybe that fuse would say authenticate a user. And maybe the next fuse would say, you know, get their session information, that sort of information. And so that's kind of how the hierarchy works and how some of the terminology flows. Another thing that's kind of, you know, I think overlooked a lot in Fusebox is Fuse Docs, which is it's a really good way to document your code, and it's a really good way to start prototyping and building your applications. And it's basically an XML document that you can put in the top of all of your files that explains what this file is going to do. So each file can kind of be, you know, written out in a very verbose and literative fashion, saying, okay, I am, you know, the login module. I am going to take these variables, and when I'm done, I'm going to produce these variables. So it's a really good way to start building your app without even writing any code. Just sit down, write all your Fuse Docs out, and then there's actually even third-party tools that will come through, look at your code, take your Fuse Docs out and, like, you know, make them a little printable and stuff like that. So it's a really good way to document, but of course 100% completely optional. Just as optional as Flip is. So Flip is like is a lifecycle process for that was kind of built around Fusebox. But it's not necessarily 100% you need to be using Fusebox to use Flip. It just kind of works well together. And the idea is that it's a defined process of how you build software, going from requirements all the way out to, you know, deployment into production and maintenance, and how to deal with your clients and wireframing, design templates. It's a step-by-step, phase-by-phase way of working with your applications. And it works well with Fusebox because, like a lot of the wireframing and the design templates we were talking about, you can do with FuseDocs and a couple of the other features that the frameworks offer. Again, 100% optional. And you can use Flip with other things. You can use Flip with Fusebox. You can use Fusebox without Flip. It's all up to you. Because this was what's new in Fusebox 5. So Fusebox 5, you know, still 100% backward compatible with 4, which I think is a really good thing. One of the interesting things about 5 is that it's 100% CFC-based. Well, not 100%, but mostly CFC-based now instead of being CFM-based. But that's still completely compatible with your old version. So if you have a Fusebox 4 app, you could probably drop 5 in and get maybe a speed benefit at the very least. So you don't even have to, you know, take any of the new features either. So another cool thing is multiple applications under a single Fusebox app. So you can start to divide out apps under things. So if you're in a shared hosting environment, that can be really helpful. Cool ways to do application initialization, custom lexicons, and I'm going to kind of show you guys all this stuff later. Some updates to the grammar and some more finer tunes on runtime control. All right, so unfortunately for the people who are going to be listening on these podcasts, you're going to miss out on pretty much the majority of this because I'm not going to be able to read every single line of code here. But let me show you Lightpost real quick. So again, Lightpost is it's just a really, really lightweight blogging application. It's not necessarily meant to be actually be used in production by any definition. Really, really bare minimum features. But the idea was that we're going to write the same app, all the different frameworks, and then we can go back and forth and kind of compare and contrast. And if you were in Matt's talk earlier, he mentioned that right now we have, I think, five different versions of this. I have two Fusebox versions, a Model Glue version and a Mach 2 version. The Model Glue, Mach 2, and one of the Fusebox versions all use Cold Spring on the back end. They all use the exact same Cold Spring model. So we didn't change any of the code in Cold Spring, which basically is a kind of cool thing. So we're pulling the same database or same queries, same objects, whole nine yards. And you can't tell. So actually, just to show you that it's not all smoke and mirrors, I'll click open and look at the other one. It's the first time it's firing up. All right, and so just a note. So I'm running everything on VMware here. That's why you've got this big Windows Server thing running in the background. Just an old habit, but if you guys aren't using VMware, I recommend checking it out. It's awesome. So I've got basically both the Fusebox version and then the Fusebox version with Cold Spring attached to it. And as you can see, like everything is exactly the same as far as, you know, page content and stuff like that. But I think you guys get the idea. But a pretty straightforward blogging app. You know, you can log in, you can make posts, and let me see. I have a couple CSS issues, but I hope you won't hold that against me. But yeah, pretty straightforward. So we've got our navigation to add posts, log out. We have like categories, so it's not necessarily tagging because we can only have one per entry. And then we have bookmarks, which are just basically external links to other sites. And then we have a couple little features in here to manage it. And we did all the admin stuff in line, so rather than making separate admin pages, you just kind of click through. And then we recently just added RSS support. Not because it was good to demo, just because we felt like, what good is a blog if it doesn't have RSS support? So into the code. So how many people are writing Fusebox apps today, just to get a good idea? And so are a lot of you guys doing Fusebox 4 or Fusebox? All right, hands up for Fusebox 4, and hands up for Fusebox 5. Okay, wow, this is the perfect audience for me, then, because we're going to be talking exactly about that. Let me open up some files here. So the first file I want to go through is the Fusebox.xml file. And so Fusebox has a number of configuration files that we have here. And I don't know if you guys can see. Oh, you can see it pretty well. And some of the configuration files here is our Fusebox.xml. We have Fusebox init and an app init. And then your application CFM and index.cfm, which you should be familiar with. Now, the Fusebox.xml is kind of like your core configuration for the framework. It tells the framework basically how to operate, how the app is structured, and stuff like that. And it's 100% XML. There's even a DDT you can push it up against to make sure that it's valid, and tons of documentation on all the different tags. So the first part I wanted to focus on here is the circuits part. And as I mentioned before, circuits are that top-level kind of module that you'll develop in Fusebox. So it could be a login module. And in our case, we have an entry module for the blogs. We have a category module. We have a bookmarks module. So each section of the app is kind of broken out. Circuits can also be nested inside of each other, so they can kind of have hierarchies. In my blog, I have an entry, and then I have a comment that is underneath the entry, because a comment can't exist without having an entry. So we've kind of like made a relationship there. So the first part when you're writing a Fusebox app is to tell Fusebox about these relationships, so it knows about the hierarchy. It knows that, hey, if this is a comment, I should be including it with an entry all the time. So with a little bit of XML, we sit here and we define, you know, our circuits. We give them an alias. So I always have a top circuit called home. This is kind of like my master parent circuit, and then everything else falls underneath that. So that's my top level. I tell it what directory it's in and how it corresponds. And let me show you what my home directory looks like. As you can see, I have circuits for a bookmark, a category, an entry, and a login. An entry has a circuit underneath for comment. So I define all this in XML. So entry, I give it the directory path for entry, and then I'd specify which one is its parent. So this way now Fusebox knows how page requests go. It knows how hierarchies go. The next block that I actually have commented out here, and we can talk about more in my later talk right after lunch, where we talk about Cold Spring and Fusebox, are the classes. Intentionally, for this version of Lightpost, I'm not using any CFCs at all. I wanted it to keep it as simple as possible. It's kind of so anybody coming into Fusebox, you didn't have to know anything about CFCs. You can still program in a completely procedural fashion. The Fusebox with Cold Spring, obviously completely opposite. It's all CFC-driven, and you have to know a little bit more of the OO side of things for your model. So if we were using CFCs, we can actually define them here under our classes, where we could say basically keep a directory listing of all of the CFCs. Give them the dot notation path to my CFCs, and then anytime I'm referencing them in Fusebox, it knows where to get them, and I don't have to keep that dot notation everywhere throughout my app. So it's kind of like a centralized way to let Fusebox know. And then Fusebox also do a little bit of CFC management in the back end, but nothing is as extensive as Cold Spring. The next section is the parameters for Fusebox itself. So these are the internal Fusebox controls. Chances are you usually never have to edit these controls outside of maybe the development or the mode. So right now I'm running in a development full load. Go ahead. It doesn't recognize a variable. So the way to do that, and I've done this in the past, is to write a plugin that looks at your server and determines, and like the plugin's going to be pretty custom to your server, so I'll say, okay, well, if it's this server IP, then you know your production, so make sure that you're running in production. But you also need a way to kind of flip that on and off, so when I go into debug production, I need to make sure it doesn't keep overriding me when I turn it off. To step back a little bit about Fusebox and how it works internally, what Fusebox does is it looks at all these XML files, it looks at all your ColdFusion files, and it actually generates more ColdFusion code, and that's the ColdFusion code that gets run. So we actually have a parse directory, and this parse directory is dynamically parsed ColdFusion code based on, and I can open one for one of my Fuse actions here. So it's ColdFusion code dynamically generated for that action specifically. So it looks at my XML, it looks at what I'm trying to do, it looks at about its hierarchy, and then it says, okay, I know how to write this code, and it writes the code for you. And that gives you tremendous speed events. So when we talk about these modes that we're kind of flipping on and off, what we're trying to tell it is every time in development mode, I want you to keep reparsing those pages because I'm going to be constantly making changes. Once we get into production, Fusebox says, well, if you're not making changes, I don't need to keep looking at the original files. I can just assume everything's the same. So in your development, we leave it in development full load, so it's constantly get refreshing itself. So the only other one that other two that you might want to change is your default Fuse action. So if I don't specify a Fuse action or an event with a destination, this is the one we get bounced to. And for my case, for the blog, I just say, just show me all the recent posts. So that'll be like my splash page for the site. You can also determine what its Fuse action variable is, and you know, default is Fuse action. You can go through and kind of tweak a lot of little things here, but for the most part, you know, these are kind of development only parameters that you'll be messing around with. But to move along a little. So the next major section is the global Fuse actions. I'm going to come back to global Fuse actions in a bit, but I kind of want to show you the ideas behind them. So I've got nothing in my app init where I could actually call Fuse actions based on the application loading, much like how you're initializing a component on the first time it comes up. We're able to fire off actions on pre-process and post-process. And so to get a better idea, because we haven't really talked about it, let me open up one of these. And I'm going to go ahead and open up my home circuit. Now, so every circuit needs to have one thing, and that's its circuit XML. So that's the definition of the circuit. This is how it's configured. And the circuit XML is what replaced your old switch statements in the old Fusebox days. So rather than having a CFML switch case statement in there where we could write as much CFML as we want, which kind of led us into problems because there's nothing stopping me from putting a database query in there. There was nothing stopping me from generating output here. We were able to get around best practices if we wanted to. So it wasn't the best way to enforce this to MVC patterns and whatnot. So we moved to an XML pattern, which has got a very strict language. Thankfully, we've got lexicons now, so we can actually kind of go outside of that strict language again, but at least we have a standard way of doing so. So in my home circuit, I have all the different events or fuse actions. And, you know, I have one for main, which is like, you know, show my main page. I have one that actually generates my debug. But the one I want to show you on preprocess is, so before any circuit is ever run, whatever your event is, we run through these preprocesses. And one of them is get all of my global XFAs. So for those of you who are new to Fusebox, an XFA is an exit fuse action. And what this is, the concept is that you give a variable name and then you give it a destination of the next fuse action. So I have an XFA called view that points to entry.display. So in all of my display pages and all of my HTML, I'm not going to actually hard code any links anywhere. I'm only going to hard code our XFA variables. So that way I have a centralized place at a top level that's not embedded in my HTML to change links and to change this sort of thing. XFAs can be a lifesaver, too, when you have to kind of like change the flow of your app and stuff like that. But I want to have XFAs that are available for the entire app, ones that are built off of my navigation that gets displayed on every page. So for a pre-process, I come in here and I create all of these XFAs. So anything getting called now will always have access to these XFAs. And let me shift back. And the other thing I'm doing is I'm actually calling a couple queries that I need that are going to be on every page, like a query that has all the categories and a query that has all the bookmarks. And that, again, is because those are being displayed on every single page as part of the navigation. So I need to make them available for every page request. And so finally, we've got the ability to then execute code once your circuit's done at the very end. And this is usually where I'll put my page renderer. So in the old days, before frameworks or even in the older Fusebox, you could have your onRequestEnd.cfm, and after everything had run, you'd come into onRequestEnd.cfm and say, okay, let me take all these variables I got, and I'll generate the HTML now. So I can kind of do the same thing now with the post process, where I actually have an output function. And my output function is very, very simple. It's actually a little more complicated than it needs to be because of RSS, but all I'm doing is I'm coming in here, I'm looking in to see if there's a variable exists that says we're doing RSS or if we're doing HTML, and I'm just displaying different layout files based on it. And your layout file is basically exactly what it sounds like. It's your high-level layout. So let me fire that up. This is where you're going to see the skeleton of my XML. You guys can see this okay. So this is basically the skeleton of all of the HTML. And throughout my page requests, I'm building a variable called request.content. So you can kind of see it sporadically pushed in here. So I have request.content.title for the page title. For the header, anything that needs to go in the head, I got request.content.head. And you kind of come down, and I've got one for the body. So that each your page generates is going to go into this variable. So throughout your circuit, we're kind of populating these variables as we go along, as we go through each little page. And at the very end, we say, okay, take all those variables, put them all together, and then we get all our HTML. And I have a couple, you know, security and navigation things kind of interlinked here. I think you guys get the idea. And so this is my page renderer, basically. I go home.output. It determines whether we're doing HTML or RSS and just holds a different one. As you can see, the only difference between RSS is that I needed to specify a doc type of XML so that it renders properly in like a browser. And so all I'm doing is I'm dropping that request.content.rss, but I'm just specifying the content type before I do it. So that way, if I go to it in Internet Explorer, it looks pretty. And so that's basically what, you know, your post process is in a really quick intro into what a circuit like or a circuit and fuse action might look like. At the end, I'm going to get back and we'll come back and talk about plugins, which is a really good way to extend some of the functionality that the framework does. So if you want the framework to do more than it's already doing for you, I've written a plugin that actually does some custom exception handling where it looks at certain files. We'll come back at the end and we'll talk about that. For now, I'm going to dive into. For now, I'm going to dive into the entry circuit, which is kind of like the main circuit for this app since it's got all the good stuff. And it's not too small. So as you can see, I've got my main entry circuit, which is responsible for the blog entries, and it has a circuit of its own, a child circuit for comments. So when anyone leaves a comment on the blog, this is the circuit for that. And underneath that, we have several different files. So Fusebox, for a long time, has had file prefix file prefix, some sort of, what's the word I'm looking for? Not best practice, but like, oh, a standard, where, you know, we prefix all of your files to explain what they're doing. That way you don't have all these different files running around trying to figure out which is doing what. And they even have a standard list of files that should, or prefixes for each file. So I have a bunch of ACT files, which are for actions. I have a query files, which actually have queries in them. And then I have my DSP files, which are the ones for display. And so those are my three major categories here. There's a lot more of these prefixes out there for whatever you're doing. But the idea is that way, when someone comes to this, they're like, well, I need to get the query for, you know, getting all the entries. They know exactly which file to look for. They're pared down to queries, and they can say, oh, okay, I'll get the get entries. And then, of course, we have our CircuitXML, which defines what to do when fuse actions are called. So the first one does the main page. If I come up here, I'll show you what a fuse action. You can see that everything comes through index.cfm. So every page request always goes to index.cfm. And the only difference is going to be the fuse action that's fired, which is kind of like the event. So it says, go to entry, so for entry.recent, entry being the circuit name, and call recent fuse action. And so coming back, that relates to my XML, right back to this top first fuse action with the name of recent. Now, one of the things that I like to do is, but it's completely up to you how you want to handle this, is I like to have all of my acts and queries privately as their own fuse action. So if I scroll down to the bottom here, and you can see I commented here and said these are public. The reason I did that is because I have a bunch of them that are actually private. So they can only be called internally by fuse actions, by other fuse actions. No one could come to a page and go to entry.output form to get it. It only can be done internally. So I'll wrap some of my page renders, and I'll wrap all of my queries and ACT files this way, because one, it allows me to pass parameters in if necessary in a much more formalized fashion. But also, what we're doing here is I'm breaking out the controller, which is up top, with the view, or with the model. And because Fusebox is actually tasked with handling all parts, the model view and the controller, this file I wanted to be able to say, okay, well, my model's down here. This is the stuff that deals with my data, my database stuff. And the controller is what, you know, pulls all the pieces together and goes through it. So I wanted to make those kind of separated out. So for the get recent, all we're doing is we're calling an action, do action equals get recent. And so following in this file, we're coming down to get recent. And what it all that's doing is including a template, that query.getEntries. So if I was to pop this open, you're going to see pretty much what you expect to see, which is just a query. Of course, and I'm using some CF params to make sure that any variables that that are required to run this query are always going to be there. And so I've got like category ID, active number, number to return. But that's all that's in this file, and that's what makes this file a lot more reusable. So I can use this then in multiple different functions. I can use this wherever because all it's doing is getting that query. That's all its job is. And that's part of one of the better benefits of Fusebox. And, you know, some people say, well, you end up having all these different files, and it has a lot more files in Model Glue, and it has a lot more files in Mach 2. But the point is that we're getting much more granular. So those files are a lot more portable in the long run. So all I'm doing is I'm getting that query, and once I have that query, I'm including that my display page, which is dsp.entries, and I'm telling it to store it in that request.content.body. So it's going to render dsp.entries. Let me get to it. Now, I've noticed, because our layout is handling all the big skeleton, the HTML, the title, and all that stuff, all these DSPs are doing are just their little slice of the pie. They're only doing just the output for the entries. Everything else is handled externally for us. So I don't actually start with an HTML tag. I start with just the bare minimum HTML that I need. And all I'm doing here is I'm looping over the query that we got that I called request.queryEntry. I'm looping through it, and I'm generating the output. Pretty straightforward. Another thing you can kind of point out here is those XFAs. So I have links in here, and I need to link to maybe a comment, or I need to link to another section of the app. Go ahead.
You know, I may have missed it, but so how is this file knowing what the query name is?
So, yeah, there's a direct tie-in to that. If there's a couple ways to get around having your queries directly know what, or having your DSP files directly know what what queries are being generated otherwise, like by passing them kind of like a function. But this is kind of like the most basic standard way to do it, so I didn't want to overcomplicate our demo here. I can show you as we get farther in how you can do something like that, but right now we're kind of loosely tied to knowing when I call get entries, it always generates the request.query.entry. Another thing that would probably help out here a little bit more in the clarity, if I had my Fuse docs up at the top and I could, and my Fuse docs said I'm expecting request.query.entry, and I will, and my query file would say I'm going to create query.entry. But right now, there's really, we're kind of embedded and tied into there. So yeah, back to the XFAs. So we have our links, and rather than hard coding a link to other parts of the app, which may change if I move a circuit and move it all around, I'm just using these variables, XFA.view, and then pending the entry ID onto it, and that gets me the new entry and the new comment, stuff like that. So is everybody okay with how that page was just rendered? We came in. The first thing we did is we loaded global those pre-processes. We loaded all of our XFAs. We got a bunch of queries that we needed. And then we came in and we got the query for get recent, generated the HTML for get recent, popped back out to a post process that then generated the page, which basically gives us what we're looking at here. And so, again, that DSP page was really only concerned with this box right here of just the entries and down. Everything else was generated externally. So that's how we got to that. So that is really the most simplest possible way that you can do a... or that you can build a Fuse action. So as we move on, we're going to kind of get a little more complicated. I'm going to show you a simple add and edit form. Sorry. Phone's on vibrate, but it's still loud. So a couple things you can do with forms now. This is where we kind of get into passing in parameters and kind of making sure that your DSPs are getting what they need, and each different file has kind of like a rules of engagement for when you're working with these files. So with an add and edit form, you typically want to use the same HTML form for both. There's subtle differences in that the edit form is going to have data populated in it, where the add form is just going to be completely blank. And so to do this, and because the form itself has variables that it's going to rely on, I'm going to actually have a Fuse action specifically for rendering the form. And so remember that first private Fuse action that I had was output form. And what it does is it calls the query for getting all the categories, because we're going to have a drop down of categories, and then it renders the form. But because if I open up DSP entry form, it has a lot of dependencies on other variables, such as, and I've got them all paramed up at the top, because it has a dependency on all of these external variables, I want to be able to pass them in. So when I get, when we're doing an edit form, I want to be able to pass in the record so it knows how to populate the form and vice versa. And that's why I'm wrapping it as a separate Fuse action and not just doing it inline in DSP. So back in the Fusebox 3 days and even some of the 4 days, I think before we could actually pass parameters in, we kind of just had to know that when I use this DSP page, I need to make sure those variables are available, kind of like how we're doing on that first page. But now we have a better way to at least define that and pass in, where'd I go? Pass these things in. Let me get back to my code. So my add form does something pretty simple because it doesn't really need that much data. It comes in and calls the action of output form, but now it's passing in a parameter for a new XFA. So depending on whether it's an add form or it's edit form, it needs to go to different places. It needs to call a different Fuse action to submit it. So I want to define that XFA for just this time I'm running the page to go to entry.add, which passes it on to the appropriate Fuse action to then process that form. So that's really the only difference that's going on here. When I get into my next Fuse action, so we've submitted the form and I'm running through it, I'm doing a really quick test to make sure a form was submitted. I don't want my form execution Fuse actions to run if there's no form that's submitted. So I just do a really quick, you know, it does the struct key exist for form.fieldNames, which will only exist if a form has been submitted. And if not, I just relocate. So that's what's going on here. So just kind of show you some of the verboseness of the XML language, I can actually do if statements. It's not as straightforward as a CFIF with a CFElse. We end up wrapping if statements with a condition and then having true brackets or true tags and false tags depending on how we want it to go. But you still have that flexibility that we had back in this switch days. Once I'm sure that a form has been submitted, I call an action for create. which is actually calling an ACT file. And let me pop that guy open. And again, I'm doing just some house cleaning here, where I'm making sure that all the attributes that this file needs were passed in, and if it isn't, I'm throwing errors saying, okay, you know, you're missing a field or whatnot. Once I know that all those attributes that I need have been passed in, I'm running just some really quick validation on them, just making sure that, you know, the IDs are right, that if it's not empty string, just because it's there doesn't mean it's not empty. So I want to make sure that you actually specified a title or it's a certain character length, that sort of thing. And then I'm actually writing, executing the query that will do the insert for this add record. So I'm inserting it directly in. So again, this act create entry is just responsible for one thing, creating entries. It takes the variables that it needs, creates the entry, it does nothing else. So it's pretty very modularized. Once that's been created, I'm displaying a message to the user. And again, is another example of passing in parameters. So in my home circuit, I have a message of fuse action that all it does is, and I'll show you real quick, if I do a post, is it just basically displays confirmation messages. If I do it real quick, again, forgive me for the button that's not too visible. Dun, dun, dun. So there's one of our confirmation messages, not the one we wanted to see, but did I change any of those files while I was running around? Interesting. Anyway. Because just like that message is being displayed that says generating an error, I'm able to pass in parameters that for the message fuse action, like a title, a message, and a forward, where to go after we're done. And that's why I'm passing these parameters in. So again, we have now a better way to get those, to make these handshakes to the next file.
So are those defaulting? Are those also defaults as well in case you pass title in a different, is there a way to write that?
Right. So this is actually a fuse action that I wrote myself. So I can actually show you off of my home, open up my circuit.xml, and I have my message. And so XML grammars that are supported is a set tag. Set tag does exactly what you expect to do. It creates variables and sets values to them. But one of the other things is it has an attribute for overwrite, whether the variable should be overwritten if it's being passed in or not. So I have this as overwrite as false. And so these set tags are pretty much acting like CF params. They're setting the name of the variable. They're setting a default value. The only thing they don't do that CF param does is enforce a data type. So again, if I didn't specify it, it would just use system message. And if I didn't specify for message, it would just be blank. So I have my defaults kind of hard-coded into here. I hope that error doesn't. All right, well, we're still working on that. So, and let's talk about lexicons. I also noticed I skipped over my app init, and I'll come back to that in a second. So lexicons are really cool. And I really like lexicons a lot, and they've pretty much saved my life in a numerous times. So the idea when we moved to XML-based syntax over your CF switch was that people were getting away with kind of things they shouldn't be getting away with CF switch, because you had the full power of the ColdFusion language in your controller. So you could put output in the middle of your controller. You could make a database call in the middle of your controller. Things that weren't necessarily best practices and are good, you know, are good philosophies to have. But so moving to XML, they wanted to firm up what you were and were not allowed to do in controllers. I think they came back and they made it a little too tight, and that's where lexicons come in. So for me, I like to throw errors in my controller. I like to check for things like if it was a form formatted, and if it wasn't, I want to actually just throw an error natively, a CF, a good old-fashioned ColdFusion error, which will get caught by something. So if I come down to my edit form, which is very much similar to our previous forms, except now we've got a couple requirements to generate this. I'm checking to make sure that when I do an edit form that an entry ID was passed, because I don't know what to edit if you don't tell me what entry ID to pass. And if it's not there, I want to throw an error. But Fusebox XML syntax doesn't have a way to throw errors. So this is where lexicons come in. I need to extend the language itself, this XML grammar, to do basically what I need it to do. And so I wrote a lexicon that mimics CF throw. Now, Sean actually includes a number of lexicons out of the bat when you install Fusebox. And as you can see, A bunch of them mirroring direct correlations to cold fusion. So we have a CF package here, and there's an abort, there's a case, a catch, a cookie, a default case, a dump, a lock, a switch, a throw. All these tags that aren't necessarily supported in the XML language. And so you're thinking, if we were trying to enforce people to not do things, why are we giving them a way to do them now? The good thing about lexicons is now we're doing them in a standard way. We're doing them in a much more organized fashion rather than just throwing things left and right. So as a application architect, I can make the decision for my entire application whether I want errors to be thrown in the controller. It's not up to one person to come in and just write code in line. He has to register this lexicon. We have a standard way of doing it, and maybe I can even limit some of those functions. So I'm going to pop open my throw lexicon, which it's really straightforward stuff. I mimicked all of the same attributes that are on my CF throw already. So I pass in a type, I pass in a message, and a detail. And there are a couple other ones. And all this lexicon really is a function that looks at what I've passed in. It goes through, does a little bit of validation, and at the very end it actually generates the CF throw. And I don't know how well you can see this, but the last thing it does once it makes sure we have everything to do is we're generating CF throw with the type, with the message, with the detail, with the error code. And then that actual code is then pushed straight into that parse file that we saw before. So now we can actually push kind of code behind the scenes into Fusebox, thereby extending the language of the Fusebox language and extending its capabilities. And so throwing errors is a pretty simple example, but it happens to be one that I used a lot, but wasn't supported, so I have it kind of speckled throughout here. The talk I'm going to do after lunch, when we're talking about integrating ColdSpring, we actually have ColdSpring lexicon, so we can get beans out of ColdSpring and we can initialize ColdSpring, because it's something we'd want to do here rather than in an ACT file. Without lexicons, if I wanted to do a CF throw, I would actually have to have a CF include that would have CF throw and then all of those variables, which is a really kind of a dirty way to do things. Or I'd have to have a fuse action that's at the top level that I could always call and pass these parameters, which would then include a CFM file that would then have CF throw. So lexicons are just a much more elegant way to extend the language. And there's other ways to get around it, but it's definitely the most preferred. One thing to note that when you're using lexicons, you have to let Fusebox know about lexicons in some manner. So there's a default lexicon directory where you just push them all in there. But you have to tell it that in this XML, you need to know about this new language change. And so at the very top, after I have the name of the circuit, whether it's accessed as public, I have a new attribute there called XML namespace. And I'm specifying the namespace as CF. And I'm pointing to the folder under lexicons for CF slash. So it's the CF folder under lexicons. And that way, when Fusebox runs through here and it sees my code, which is preempted with the CF, CF colon throw, then it knows, okay, I know to look in the lexicon directory to figure out what to do with this language because I'm not sure. So those of you guys who are doing any Flex development now, this should kind of look familiar since everything starts with the MX namespace. And when you add your own custom namespaces in, it's the same sort of paradigm in XML. So that is the lexicons in the short. And I think got a little bit more time. I skipped over by accident, and I extremely apologize. Is one of the nicer new features of Fusebox is how you can initialize application variables. As I mentioned before, there's two files here. There's an app init and just an init file. Now, your Fusebox init file is kind of like your old application.cfm. It gets called at the beginning of every request. So if you need to initialize your request, and so it's kind of a misnomer. When I think of init, I think of things that run one time when an application initializes, but it actually means that it's initializing the request. So things that I want to have on every request, like my request structure, request.content structure, goes here. So that way I know it's guaranteed to be there. I also do some really quick session stuff to create a user session, and I'm copying UDFs into things. So kind of the common variables that I want available to all my request variables are there. So you notice these are all request-based variables in session, not application variables, which I only want to set once. And that's where we get into our app init file. So this file only gets called when Fusebox first fires up the first time. So that means that I can start to set application variables and not have to keep rewriting them over and over again. They're going to persist across all the requests. And so this is where your variables are going to end up going that are application specific, for like, you know, the name. I create a structure called application settings that has a name for Lightwire, the version of it. I have a whole block here for my data source, so I can specify the data source name, username, password, that sort of stuff. We also have the blog settings, which actually every single one of these are used when we're generating RSS, but we needed to have them in there. And I also have a couple UDFs that I want to be made available throughout my app. So I use simple UDFs like an isValid ID, which basically means, is it a number and is it not zero? Is it greater than zero? Because that, you know, my database will never have a negative one as an ID field. But that's just how I do it. So I have all these little kind of functions that are helpful to me. And so that's an app init. So in a nutshell, this is where your application-specific variables go that aren't Fusebox-specific. They're just, hey, you know, apps that your variables your app's going to need. So the last thing I want to talk about is plugins. So lexicons extend the XML grammar of Fusebox, but plugins extend the actual functionality of Fusebox. So when an error is thrown, Fusebox has its own way of process that it goes through and what it does with the error. But I wanted to extend that, and I wanted to call different error templates based on the type of error that was called. So let me pop open back into my original XML configuration where we specify how everything works. There's a plugin block, and you can make plugins that get fired at all these different types of all these different times during your request. So I can fire plugins during pre-process, pre-fuse action, post-fuse action. I can fire a plugin when an exception handle is fired in a fuse action, and I can do post and process and post error as well. So I wrote a really quick custom exception handler that when any time an error is thrown, it'll look at this plugin and it'll actually execute what's in there. And I'm actually even now passing parameters, which is a new thing for Fusebox 5, is I can pass parameters into this plugin. And just really quickly, what it does is I have a directory here of error templates that Fusebox has built into it. As you can see, each Fusebox has all these different files for different types of errors that happen in Fusebox. So if it's missing a fuse, Fusebox will call missing Fusebox, not missing fuse update panel. So I kind of like that style and that pattern, but I wanted to be able to call different files based on whether they were custom errors that I was throwing. So I created a couple files like custom.database, custom.validation. So anytime an error is thrown, my plugin's going to go and look at the type of error that's thrown. So it's going to say, oh, okay, I have a custom.validation error that's been thrown. So I'm going to go and look at this directory and see which template is best to be used. And that way I can actually separate error messages out depending on how it goes. So maybe my database has a lot more extended info about, you know, what the database error was, and it's seeing, you know, if the debug is on, then I'll give you a lot more information. If not, I'll just say, oh, it's a tiny little database error. So rather than have this giant error handling page, I'm able to break it out into a little more concrete. Some of the other stuff you can kind of do is say, oh, in validation, I can change, maybe instead of having a big, you know, red X or exclamation point where something goes wrong, I could have something a little more nicer for the user for validation type of stuff. But that's kind of the general idea. So with the plugin, what I've done is I've just extended what the framework does and how the framework handles errors. There's tons of plugins out there already. So we have security plugins out there to manage your sessions and user logs and stuff like that. It's because, you know, we have such a large community, you can pretty much find plugins to do the stuff that you need to do. Go ahead.
Can you explain the difference between
the
fuse action exception phase and process error?
So a fuse action exception is the error that gets fired during a fuse action, versus the processed error is any time, I think, if I error anywhere in this process, like especially even in my fuse action exception, we would fire back to there. So the process error is kind of like if you didn't catch the error by fuse action and your fuse action, or if I didn't catch the error by here and I didn't do anything about it, or that threw an error itself, we've got the catch-all. So this is the just display a blank HTML page or something like that. It also covers things that are outside of Fusebox itself, outside of you know, the Fusebox world that it can see. So it's anything that happens in the process will end up getting bubbled up there. So I pushed mine all the way up because I even wanted to check for those for Fusebox specific errors. So that's pretty much all the different parts of Fusebox and how they work in an application. I hope you guys got kind of a good idea of like how these things kind of look in the real world. Anybody got questions, comments? Go ahead.
The app init is new, and I'm wondering, was that pulled out
Right. So that's basically because we were doing that on every Fusebox app because it was so common, that's where the need came in. So there's actually two ways to initialize your application variables. And if I pop that Fusebox file open again, the core XML, I skipped over that we actually, when we have our global Fuse actions, that there isn't an app in it. Now, the difference between the file that we're doing is I can do any Cold Fusion I want in that file. So it gives me a lot more control as a developer to do what I want. In here, I can only call actions. I can only do what the XML syntax allows me to do. So you have two different ways to do it. But yeah, the appinit.cfm was pretty much because we were doing it on everything. So we were building plugins that were doing this that would say, hey, do these variables exist? If they don't, create them. And so now there's just a little more formalized way to do it. And the best part about the new way of doing it is now it's linked into Fusebox and its mode. So if it's set in development mode, it knows I'm going to call appinit every time because I want to do full loads. And if it's set in production, it knows to only call it one time and stuff like that. So now Fusebox is a little more aware of how it works rather than the plugins kind of doing it in their own. So that's the main difference. When do they? So they normally get parsed the first time the Fusebox gets fired up. So in development mode, it's happening every time, every single time I do it. If I was to kick this over into production, when you first initialize the Fusebox app, when I first hit my first index.cfm, it chugs through and knocks them all out. So if you're working in a really big environment where you've got staging and test and you're following all the great best practices that maybe we don't always do, I recommend you build it out in test or you build it out in staging, hit it the first time there, have it generate all those parse files, and then set it back to production, copy all the parse files over, and bring everything onto the server. That way it never actually even runs that parsing, which is, you know, the biggest part of the load right there is generating all these files. It never runs on production. It's just automatically just there. That fires at the top of every request. So that fires much like application.cfm does. It's a misnomer, like when I think of init, I think of the app init concept, not the request init concept. But that's what they're referring to, is the request is the first time the request comes through. So that's where you'll set all your request variables.
Getting back to my question about development mode, that kind of thing, you have that parameter section you have there. Would it be possible to use the Garmin if statement that you use in the circuit?
I don't believe you can. So the circuits grammar versus the XML, Fusebox.xml grammar is a little bit different. So the circuits grammar has all of those ifs and stuff like that. This file is a lot more limited in what you can do. You can't do lexicons here either. So I would say that was another way you could kind of get around it. And that's when we get into my Cold Spring talk, where I want to initialize all my Cold Spring stuff one time on load. I end up having to create an app and init method that calls something else that I could load my lexicons in before I do it.
Your thoughts on applying MVC to Fusebox?
Oh, so applying MVC. So Fusebox has got, you know, it is doing MVC or trying to enforce it as best we can. I think what you're getting is whether we have folders of M versus V versus C. You know, that's pretty much up to you. I don't like it. I've something about it just kind of bothers me. I like being able to look at a circuit, and this is completely, again, a personal preference, but I like being able to look at a circuit like entry and seeing all the pieces that it's in. I don't like that I'd have to go to a M and look for entry stuff, and I'd have to go to the V folder and look for the views and stuff like that. I also think this is a lot more modular. So I've worked on projects that have done both, and I've had to take projects where someone who wrote like a really nice module or like maybe a user admin module, but I want to port it into my other app. Well, if he's using that MVC way, I have to go in and figure out all the different files, and I have to, it's not like it's, you know, it's rocket science, like you can't do it. It's just a little more cumbersome. So I like to go in this direction. When you get into the Cold Spring side of things, you'll start to see that these files start to decrease drastically, and so that whole notion of breaking these things out into the file structure doesn't become as much of an issue. But again, it's a personal preference.
How often are you manually creating this Fusebox XML as opposed to dynamically generating it through some sort of a Fusebox XML generator?
Yeah, well, the Fusebox XML, I'm trying to think of things that I'm not aware of any dynamically generated ones. So we used to have what was an add-on back in the day for the older Fusebox apps, and I'm not sure there are. I'm sure there's got to be tools to generate this sort of thing. But because like your circuit files are very customized, they're, you know, they are the control of your application. So there's not much you could do to auto-generate it outside of auto-generating the shell. Outside of doing, you know, prototyping, wireframing, and then taking wireframes and going into it. I'm just not aware, so I do everything by hand. Not yet. So, as with everything, you kind of do this in our spare time. So, we've just finished these four versions, and we actually did this for Max last year. We had a big framework session at Max that was like, I think, a 2 or 3 hour session where we talked about all the different frameworks. We all got up on stage, but this is why we built Lightpost, so that we could all have the same demo and kind of interact between the two. But we've been dragging our feet about publicly getting a site up and running, and I promise you, it's coming very soon. It's just a matter of time. We have all the code posted on SVN. I'm not sure if it's even public. There's also a couple other versions of Lightpost that are down the road. Chris Scott is doing a model glue for Java version of Lightpost. So now we're even outside of the ColdFusion frameworks and showing a Java-based framework that's based off of model glue. And he's doing some stuff with Hibernate, too, and some other interesting things. But the idea is that when new frameworks arise or different ways to approach them, we'll have this kind of standard set. So I promise we'll get a site up sooner than later. We're feature complete on the blog, which was what we were dragging our feet for. Well, I mean, we have no relation to it at all. So this was just when we went out to Max, we saw the need of just having some easy standard way to like write apps and all these different things. So yeah, you could come back and start doing like performance testing, load testing. We could use it as that sort of thing. And now I think Matt and Chris and on the Cold Spring side, they're using Lightpost as one of their test harnesses. So when they do a new version of Cold Spring, they make sure that Lightpost runs as part of it. So stuff like that. Yeah, so I use the do mostly when I want to. So right here, first of all, in the XML, again, because the Fusebox XML doesn't have all the syntax of circuit, there is no include. I have to use a do here. So that's why I'm using do's. Right, so this is why I'm using them at this level. In the circuit files, I tend to use the do's when the files I'm including have dependencies on other variables because I can actually pass in parameters. Let's see if I can get that file back up. So if I go into my entry circuit XML, yeah, and so as Ray pointed out, I probably should have been using a do at the first one, but I kind of wanted to show the really basic. So at the very next one, when I'm doing categories, because the get recent requires an attribute of category.id, that's why I'm using a do, because it allows me to specify parameters that I can pass in directly. So at least then it's clear from people looking at the app that this is required, and then the app can then guarantee that it's going to be there when it fires. So that's really the main difference. Is that it? All right. Well, thank you guys. I hope you guys got a lot out of it. After lunch, I'll be using a lot of the same things that we talked about, except changing our model into Cold Spring. If you aren't familiar with Cold Spring too much, that would be a good topic. I'm not going to get too deep into Cold Spring because there's introduction to Cold Spring talks, but we'll show you some of the benefits of why you'd want to use Cold Spring in Fusebox and really how it can simplify a lot of this process. Thank you. Oh, please remember to fill out your surveys.